So it's November 15th, 2009, here in Radhadesh. We're reading from Madhya Lila, chapter 17, text 208, till the end of the chapter. Viksha dale sukasari dila darshana. Taha deki prabhur kichus tunate haile mana. So this is again Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in Vrindavan. And remember he'd been seeing the cows and the deer, right? Remember from last week? When a male and female parrot appeared on the branches of a tree, the Lord saw them and wanted to hear them speak. Both parrots flew unto the hand of the Lord and began to chant the transcendental qualities of Krishna, and the Lord listened to them. There's many places throughout the writings of the Goswamis and the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu where there's conversations of the male and female parrots in Vrindavan describing the qualities or the glories of Krishna or the qualities or the glories of Srimati Radharani or the qualities, the activities of Krishna or Radharani's associates. So here in 2.10, the male parrot sang, "The glorification of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is beneficial to everyone in the universe. His beauty is victorious over the gopis of Vrindavana, and it subdues their patience." So, Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam, when the four Kumaras see Lakshmi and Narayan, that the residents of Vaikuntha think Narayan is more beautiful than Lakshmi, but the residents of Vrindavan think Radharani is more beautiful than Krishna. But here the male parrot is saying that Krishna's beauty is victorious over the gopis of Vrindavana. So sometimes the male parrot takes Krishna's point of view and the female parrot takes Radharani's point of view. His pastimes astound the goddess of fortune. So we know the goddess of fortune does austerities in order to enter into Vrindavan Lila, but it never happens because she won't give up her mentality of being the goddess of fortune. So sometimes we do that too, right? We say, "Krishna, I want to serve you, I want to serve you." And he says, "Okay, give up this upadhi or that upadhi." We go, "No." And his bodily strength turns Govardhan Hill into a small toy like a ball. His spotless qualities are unlimited, and his behavior satisfies everyone. Lord Krishna is attractive to everyone. Oh, may our Lord maintain the whole universe. This verse is found in the Govinda Lilamrita 13:29. So who's the author of Govinda Lilamrita? Krishna Das Kaviraj. So he's quoting from another one of his own books. After hearing this description of Lord Krishna from the male parrot, the female parrot started to recite a description of Radharani, Srimati Radharani. The female parrot said, "Srimati Radharani's affection, her exquisite beauty and good behavior, her artistic dancing and chanting, and her poetic compositions are all so attractive that they attract the mind of Krishna, who attracts the mind of everyone in the universe." Purport, this verse is found in the Govinda Lilamrita 13:30. So that is also our idea, to attract the mind of Krishna. Although Krishna attracts everyone, our process of bhakti is to try to attract Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati would say, don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. Even if you want to meet some great person in this world, it's far better to try to do something that they will notice than to try to force your way to see them. In fact, it's generally impossible. If you want to see some big person in this world, if you want to see Bill Gates, you're thinking we could use some more money to fix up Bhaktivedanta College, right? So let's go see Bill Gates. You know, it will be impossible. You write him an email, you know, if you try to knock on his door, I'm sure he has security guards. And even if you try to go through a secretary, the secretary will say, "Who are you?" It's like I had a problem with an airline about a year ago. So I contact their customer service, and the customer service, their whole business is to say no. And Prabhupada says, don't do a bureaucracy, because the whole business of a bureaucracy is to say no. So right, the people are trained. "I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry. That's our policy. I'm very sorry," right? And so this goes on for several months. I try to contact all different people. And then finally, I was able to find out how I could get to the secretary of one of the bosses. And as soon as I did that, all of my problems were solved. Right? But you can't force your way. I kept asking the frontline people. I kept saying, you know, how do I talk to somebody who's in charge? How do I talk to a superior? How do I talk to somebody who can actually make a decision? And they'd say, I'm very sorry. You know, I couldn't get past them. But now there was one gentleman who had a problem with the same airline that I did. He was a musician and they broke his $5,000 guitar. He actually saw them through the airplane window throwing his guitar around outside. And so he talked to all the people in the airline, and finally he said, listen, if you won't pay me for my guitar, I'm going to write a song. I'm a musician. I'll write a song about you. And that's what he did. He put it on YouTube, and I think he got like 3 million people watching it in a week. So then the airline called him and said, we'll pay for your guitar. Anyway, he said, it's too late. Just give it to charity. But the point is, you couldn't get in touch with these higher-ups. You had to do something to get their notice. You had to do something so they would know. So we don't want to adopt the position of like this guy or the demons. We don't want to bring Krishna's notice by criticizing him. But we want to do something so that he will notice us. I could say in Radharani, she acts in such a way that Krishna's mind becomes attractive, and you can say, well, that's Radharani, but actually, we're all supposed to do that. We're all supposed to do something where Krishna becomes interested in us. We often talk about how none of us are supposed to be interested in recognition, right? Give up all desires for profit, adoration, and recognition. Or amani na mani dena. We should respect everyone and not look for respect in return. But in the Krishna book, when Akura is going to Vrindavan, he's thinking, when I go there, Krishna and Balaram will recognize me. They'll say, oh, Uncle Akura. And Prabhupada writes there that someone who's not trying to be recognized by Krishna has a life that's condemned. So our personalistic philosophy is that you cannot stop anything. The impersonalist idea is that you're supposed to stop everything. Stop all desires. Buddha understood that suffering is due to desires. If I don't care about anything, if I don't desire anything, if I have no attachments, then there'll be no suffering. One of the members here who's not here now, he was doing some research on what is suffering. So we were talking about that all suffering is due to attachment. And it is very simple to understand. If you open up the newspaper and you read, as you will if you open up and any day, about people who've been killed. Somebody was murdered, somebody died in an earthquake, isn't it? Every single day, some headline news will be about somebody dying. Do you cry? If you read that in the headlines, do you cry? Do you suffer? Do you experience suffering? If you open up the newspaper or look at the internet newspaper and it says there was another bomb in Iraq and 20 soldiers were killed, does it affect you? Do you feel any suffering? You do? You're very compassionate. But generally, you don't, unless you knew somebody. If it was your friend or your neighbor, or if in the article they really talk about one person and you start to get some attachment. And right now, I'm sure in Brussels, so many people are in a hospital, sick and dying. But we're not feeling any suffering because there's no attachment. And as soon as there's attachment, I feel suffering. And you can say, but wait a minute, you know, if you cut your body, it's just electricity in the brain. But because we're attached and we're thinking, it's my body, therefore we feel suffering. It's very often recounted by people who have out-of-body experiences in a hospital or something. They'll look down and say, oh, that poor fellow looks like he's really in trouble. They're not identifying as their self. So therefore, the impersonalists and the voidists, they say that just stop all attachment. Very simple. Stop all attachment. And you can say, but wait a minute, the reason I'm attached is that I want things. And therefore I become attached to this body and this world in order to get things. Okay, stop wanting anything. Just stop desires, stop attachment, and then whatever happens, you will not feel any suffering. You'll just feel nothing, which, if you're suffering, I suppose, sounds very attractive. Right? If you're going to have a surgical operation, they don't promise you, we're going to give you something to make you feel pleasure. They say, we're going to give you something to make you feel nothing. And people are very good. I'd much rather feel nothing than feeling you cutting my arm open. But how long do we want to feel nothing? That's not a natural position, to just feel nothing. Therefore, Krishna says, klesho dikatarashtesham avyakta saktachetasam avyakta hi gatir dukam dehavadbir avapite. Says, this is not recommended. You'll have to work very, 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 very hard to get to the point of nothing. Like the Jain Mahavir, he adopted this process, and for 13 years, he traveled naked, and one time he got a thorn in his eye, he just left it there. To be completely detached. After 13 years of such severe austerity, he finally felt nothing. So very difficult. I mean, if you study the life of someone like Mahavir and you'd say, there's no way I would be able to do this. Impossible. What to speak of giving it as a religious system for the general mass of people. And then if you finally succeed at stopping all desires and stopping all attachment, most people, if they try to stop all desires and all attachment, what will happen? They'll become what? Angry. They'll just become angry. Or they'll fail. You know, like the person who just goes on a diet and they're just eating brown rice and potato soup, and then on Saturday they buy 3 gallons of ice cream. So generally, if you try to just stop all desires and all attachment, you can stop, and then you fail. Or else by stopping, you stop through anger. So most people will not succeed, but if you succeed, then the problem is you get stuck there. You've gotten so good at stopping all of your attachment and all of your desires that when it comes to moving on in spiritual life and getting spiritual desires, you can't do it anymore. You start thinking that being attached to Krishna is Maya. So that's not our process. We are not propounding an impersonal process. We are propounding a personal process. So how do we get rid of profit, adoration, and distinction? This desire to be respected. So we do want a profit. And for those of you, any of you are Bengali, I'm sorry that I'm not, my pronunciation of Bengali is terrible. I don't know if, even know if you'll be able to understand what I'm saying. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Prema dana bina vyarta daridra jivana dasa kori betan more deha prema dana. Betan. What does betan mean in Bengali? Salary. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, I want a salary. Dasa kori, I want to be your servant. Betan money, I want a salary. Like if you hire somebody here to do some construction work, yes, I want to be your servant and build a building, and I want a salary. Who will come and say, I want no salary? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, I want a salary. I want some profit. He uses the word artha, prema dana bina vyartha. Daridra means poor. If no, you'll have no wealth, you'll be poor. If you don't have prema dana, and dana means wealth. He's using these terms, dana, artha, daridra. He wants some profit. What profit does he want? Prem. He wants the profit of love. So we're interested in a profit. We want the profit. The profit we want is love. The way to get free of wanting a material profit is to want the real profit. Then adoration. Here it's saying how Krishna is adoring his devotee. We want Krishna to be enchanted by us. You say, that's ridiculous. Why would Krishna be enchanted by us? But just like the parent is enchanted by their little child. I was talking to one devotee in Australia, and he said, how is it that the moment my son was born, I would have given my life for him? And how could I feel such attachment in one moment? He said, one moment I didn't know this person, and the next moment I would have sacrificed my life. So the little newborn child, the parents are enchanted. And if you've ever seen a newborn child, they're not very enchanting. They generally look like little monkeys. And they can't do anything. The newborn child, they can't smile. They can't really reciprocate at all. It takes a few weeks. But still, the parents are enchanted. Oh, look at the little toes. And oh, isn't he cute? And they're taking hundreds of pictures and posting it on the internet, you know. Right? So even though we are nothing, we are nothing. We're not even a speck, you know, as you're landing in a plane. Even when you're very close to the ground, you still can't see the people. You can see the cars, and the people are too small. You have to be right next to the ground to see that there are people. I mean, we're just nothing. We're like a little speck. But to Krishna, where it can be enchanting. Why? Because he loves us. Because he loves us. So therefore, we want to enchant Krishna with our love. And distinction, to be distinct, materially distinction means that I want to be better than everybody. I want to be above everybody, or adoration in this world. I want everyone to worship me. But we want to also be distinct in our relationship with Krishna. We each have a personal relationship with Krishna. And we want to revive that. So we want to attract Krishna by our personal relationship with him. We want to attract Krishna. That should be our goal of life. How to do something so that Krishna notices me. How to do something that Krishna will be attracted, that he'll say, oh, very nice. Very nice. And the only thing that can attract Krishna is our love and affection. Of course, we can demonstrate that by our behavior, but it's not that the behavior itself is going to interest Krishna. Krishna's not really interested in somebody building a temple or writing a paper or singing, or that doesn't interest him. But when there's love, it interests him. We're all like that. And Prabhupada says in the story of Krishna fighting with Jambavan, Krishna has all the propensities of a human being. So we also become interested in someone who loves us, actually loves us. Thereafter, the male parrot said, Krishna is the enchanter of the mind of Cupid. He then began to recite another verse. The parrot then said, my dear Shari, female parrot, Sri Krishna carries a flute and enchants the hearts of all women throughout the universe. He is specifically the enjoyer of beautiful gopis, and he is the enchanter of Cupid also. Let him be glorified. This verse is also found in Govinda Lilamrita 13:31. So this is how we get rid of this sex desire. Again, the way to get rid of sexual desire is not to try to kill it. You can't kill it. You know why you can't kill it? Where does sex desire come from? It comes from Krishna. What's its original form? Love for Krishna. So you can't kill it. Don't try to kill it. That's, again, impersonalism. If you try to kill it, again, it will come out. It will either manifest again, or you'll become angry. And we've seen this even in our devotees so many times. Although somehow people don't get this, that we're preaching a personalistic philosophy. Somehow it doesn't register, and we still try to do things in an impersonal way. So material sexuality or lust is simply the twisting of something that's part of the soul. This intense desire for connection, for creativity, for creation, for connection, for enjoyment, for exchange of love, that has its ultimate expression in loving Krishna. And those who are in love with Krishna are much more madly in love with Krishna than anyone has been mad for sex life in this world. You know, it's uncontrollable. Now, when Krishna calls, they just leave. If a man's at work and his wife calls, he doesn't necessarily just drop everything and run out the door and drive home to his wife. But when Krishna calls, then the gopis, even if they're cooking, you don't leave a chapati on the stove. I once saw a devotee leave stuff on the stove in Philadelphia. There was a fire. You don't leave something cooking on the stove. You don't leave in the middle of feeding your family, serving your mother-in-law and your husband. You don't just run out the door and taking care of your children, right? And no young girl runs out the door haphazardly dressed. But to see Krishna. So how intense is that? Far, far, far more intense than any kind of material sexual lust. Beyond. So if we want to stop this, and sexual lust is such a troublesome thing, isn't it? It's not a very nice thing. It induces us to try to pretend that we're Krishna, right? I want to attract someone to me. And then that's a pretty hard thing to do because this body's not really very attractive. It's really a losing battle. Therefore one is always going to feel anxiety. I have to make my body so attractive, but it's not really attractive. If you took all the parts of the body, if you had a plate here of hair, everybody's, just a bunch of hair, and their eyes, have another plate with some eyeballs, and some skin, and, it's revolting. How are you going to make this body attractive? It's so much anxiety, isn't there? Trying to impress the opposite sex, and trying to keep up a relationship. Isn't it? Am I right or not? Isn't it a lot of anxiety and anguish and pain and fear? And in modern society, when these things aren't arranged by the parents, when you have to go out and, capture somebody yourself, it's even more anxiety. There's so much anxiety. And then what do you speak of the results? So if it's illicit, the results are disease and unwanted children and emotional heartbreak. And if it's licit, then you have to, maintain a house and a bank account and educate your children and maintain a relationship over decades and, even... What did the Beatles say? Life goes on long after the joy of living is gone. You just you have to go on in the relationship even when there's no longer that strong attachment. And for what? A few moments of physical, emotional pleasure. For what? So you take a scale of all of the trouble, and then you take another scale of the pleasure, and you weigh them, and you see, are they equal? No, they're not equal. Not in quality or in quantity. You're getting a little bit of pleasure for a little bit of time, for a lot of trouble, for a lot of time. And actually this material lust is the ultimate expression of our envy of Krishna. So it's taking this envy of Krishna and I'm going to be the enjoyer. So why not turn it back to its real form by becoming attracted by Krishna? Krishna is so attractive. He's real beauty. And turning that intensity of wanting connection, wanting life, and turning that to Krishna, then there's no problem. Then it's not a struggle. It's not a battle. It simply becomes, then who becomes interested in the other? If you have gulabjamins, then why would you want five-day-old bread? It's just naturally not attractive. You don't have to say, I can't eat that bread. No, you can't eat the bread. Naturally, you'll not want to eat the bread, isn't it? So that is our process. Become attracted to Krishna. Prabhupada says specifically this deity worship will conquer this Mr. Lust. Then the female parrot began to speak jokingly to Shuka, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was struck with ecstatic love to hear her speak. The parrot Shari said, "When Lord Sri Krishna is with Radharani, he is the enchanter of Cupid. Otherwise, when he is alone, he himself is enchanted by erotic feelings, even though he enchants the whole universe." Another verse from Govinda Lilamrita, 1332. Both parrots then flew into a tree branch, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to watch the dancing of the peacocks with curiosity. When the Lord saw the bluish necks of the peacocks, his remembrance of Krishna immediately awakened, and he fell to the ground in ecstatic love. So this should be the mood of the devotees. Everything that we see should remind us of Krishna. Everything we see should remind us of Krishna. And that's not difficult, because everything is connected with Krishna. What is not connected with Krishna? In fact, seeing something as disconnected from Krishna is the definition of maya. That which appears to be a value which has no connection with me, that has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection that appears to be in darkness. So just like in ordinary life, you can have something called a trigger, like here the peacock's neck triggered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feelings of love. So just like maybe when we were little, our mother used to cook some particular preparation, and whenever we smell those things, immediately our feelings about our mother and our feelings about our home become awakened. You all have this experience? Or there's some song that you associate with something, and as soon as you hear that song, immediately you emotionally re-experience being in that situation. And these things can be positive or negative. Certain places, you just hear the name of that place and you go, oh, I don't want to go there. Isn't it? You have strong emotional connections with different things. So here we see that just the color of the peacock's neck, it triggers this emotion of love in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, as Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, that the materialists see the world as a very aggressive place. But for the devotees, they see that everything is happily situated. So a materialistic person is thinking, oh, this person is my enemy, oh, I have this problem, oh, I've got to conquer this. And the devotee is saying, oh, that reminds me of Krishna. That reminds me of Krishna. Oh, that reminds me of Krishna. Oh, that reminds me of Krishna. Even a little bit of sun that manages to come here through the clouds, even that sunshine, if we turned off all the lights, there'd still be illumination here from the sun. That's Krishna. The pull of gravity is Krishna. Our ability to think is Krishna. Your ability to make giwiks is Krishna. Your ability to write, that's Krishna. He says he's the ability in man. Even the workings of our mind, that's Krishna. And all these things can remind us, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And then one will always be happy. Even when the world has so much difficulty. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was more than just happy. Jai Shishi Radha Gopinath. He was experiencing such deep love that he just fell to the ground. So when the Brahmana saw that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was unconscious, he and Balabhadracharya took care of him. So these were the two associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that is the depth of love for Krishna we should be feeling, right? That we forget everything else. They hastily sprinkled water over the Lord's body. Then they took up his cloth and began to fan him with it. Then they began to chant the holy name of Krishna to the Lord's ear. When the Lord regained consciousness, he began rolling on the ground. So this is the intensity of love for Krishna. Why should we be satisfied with some material emotions? Right? No material emotions are going to give us this intensity that we really crave as a soul. When the Lord rolled on the ground, sharp thorns injured his body. Taking him on his lap, Balabhadra Bhattacharya pacified him. But he didn't notice. When one's full of love for Krishna, one will not notice the things of this world. It said this about Govardhan Hill. When Govardhan Hill was being held in the air, he was so thrilled at feeling the touch of Krishna's hand that the lightning bolts of Indra felt just like flowers. They didn't cause him any pain. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mind wandered in ecstatic love of Krishna. He immediately stood up and said, chant, chant! Then he himself began to dance. Being thus ordered by the Lord, both Balabhadra Bhattacharya and the Brahmana began to chant the holy name of Krishna. Then the Lord, dancing and dancing, proceeded along the path. So just like we go on Harinam and we're dancing in public, right? People become very astonished. For ordinary materialists, what's the only way they can dance and sing in public? For money? Yeah, for money. Or generally if they're intoxicated. Generally they have to be intoxicated. Even for religious observances. There's one religious observance where it's called Simhas Torah, where the Orthodox Jews dance and sing in public. They carry their scripture with them, but they first get drunk. Otherwise, they're not willing to dance and sing in public. So I'm sure a lot of people watching our Harinam party are wondering, you know, what are they taking? The Brahmana was astounded to see the symptoms of ecstatic love exhibited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He then became anxious to give the Lord protection. So this is a wonderful mood of the devotee. Rupa Goswami explains that one should have compassion for Krishna. How can anyone understand this? What religious system is teaching that you protect the Lord and that you have compassion for the Lord? One of the symptoms of surrender is feeling that the Lord will always protect me. The Lord will please have compassion on me, Lord. Right? But the devotee is thinking, oh, I have to protect the Lord. Like we're thinking, I have to feed the Lord. I have to give the Lord some flowers. I have to give him some water. And that's the mood of the devotee towards the Lord. I have to have compassion for the Lord. He's separated from his parts and parcels. Let me bring them back to him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mind was absorbed in ecstatic love at Jagannath Puri. But when he passed along the road on the way to Vrindavan, that love increased 100 times. The Lord's ecstatic love increased 1,000 times when he visited Mathura, but it increased 100,000 times when he wandered in the forest of Vrindavana. So that's also what we're looking for. We're looking for a situation where our love will increase. We want to have a relationship with somebody where our love will always get better and better, and there'll be more and more and more and more love. And some people may find that, like it's explained that King Priyavrata and his wife Bahirshmati, they had a relationship with their love where it was always increasing. But generally in this world, that love decreases. You're madly in love with someone, and after some time, it becomes more or less ordinary. That same intensity is not generally still there. Things become dry, more or less, or at least it decreases. But here we see in spiritual life, love is increasing 100,000 times. And there's no limit, as we were saying the other day, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati is saying in this purport to the Shikshastika, he's saying that although the living entity is infinitesimal, its ability to experience pleasure and love is unlimited. And it can unlimitedly expand. So why are we looking for this materially? Look for it spiritually. The fact that we want it is not wrong. Don't take away the desire for unlimited, ever-increasing love, but turn it to the place where it can be fulfilled. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was elsewhere, the very name of Vrindavana was sufficient to increase his ecstatic love. Now, when he was actually traveling in the Vrindavan forest, his mind was absorbed in great ecstatic love day and night. He ate and bathed simply out of habit. Thus, I have written a description of the ecstatic love Lord Chaitanya manifested while he walked through the 12 forests of Vrindavana. To describe it all would be impossible. Lord Ananta writes millions of books elaborately describing the transformations of ecstatic love experienced by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Vrindavana. Since Lord Ananta himself cannot describe even a fragment of these pastimes, I am simply pointing out the direction. The whole world became merged in the inundation of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One can swim in that water to the extent that he has the strength. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila's 17th chapter, describing the Lord's traveling to Vrindavana. So, it could take maybe 3 or 4 minutes. Anybody have questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Huh? We all ready to give all of our desires and emotions to Krishna? Yes. Can I comment? Of course you can have a comment. You can have a correction too if you want.
When you were speaking about this family life, you were saying this plus and minuses. For the devotees, there is plus that we will become attached, no? Like after we go through that, we will be free from this desire.
Devotee's different. Real devotee. A real devotee is different, but the real devotee is not motivated by trying to satisfy their senses. If your aim is to satisfy your senses separately from Krishna, then you will get very little pleasure and lots of suffering. The very pleasure you seek itself will become suffering. If, however, you seek your pleasure even materially in connection with Krishna, then even the suffering will become pleasure, because it's all related with Krishna. So, of course, yes, you can, if you're more or less materialistic, you can take up grihastha life as a means to become detached. That's okay. But that's not going to be the ultimate way of becoming detached. Because what happens then is people get married, they have a family, and they see that there's a lot of trouble, and then they often just think, well, maybe if I married somebody else. And that's what's going on in modern society. In modern society, people think that the cause of my difficulty is this particular person that I married, or the particular, you know, place that I live, or the particular job that I have, and if I change my situation, I would be happy. So that is not really going to give you detachment. Otherwise, we'd never take birth again. Most people try to satisfy their senses one way or another, legally or illegally. And why did they take birth again? Because they're thinking, I just didn't do it right. I didn't read the right book. I didn't have the right technique. You know, I didn't marry the right person. Somehow I just didn't get it. I know it's there. Look at all the pictures in the magazines and look at all the movies. They got it. See that movie? Look at them. They got it. I just got to do it the way they do it, and then I'll get it. So just experience. You say experience is the best teacher. No. Properly interpreted experience is the best teacher. But just experience by itself isn't going to get you anywhere. It just isn't. Don't think that just by having some nasty experience, you have to understand the source of your distress and the solution to it. So that's not really our interest. That's not how we're becoming detached. And how you choose an ashram is a little different from that. So I don't have a whole lot of time. Should I explain the positive thing? I'm already late. You have to decide. You're the only authority here. So what should I do, Maharaj? Should I go on and give an explanation of the positive? Because it's already 8:35. Okay, and just don't get me in trouble, guys, okay? So the way it works is a little different. You say, the way I'm going to become detached is by becoming attached to Krishna. That's our process. Completely. That's the complete process. You get something better. Param drishta nivartite. That is the only way to be detached, because all the things that are pushing us to enjoy this world are perversions of something real. They all have their real form. So turn that intensity of desire and emotion to Krishna, to having a relationship with Krishna, to pleasing Krishna, and that's so much nicer, you'll automatically be detached. So that's actually our process. Okay. But one may not be able to achieve that 100% in 1 minute. Theoretically, you can, but practically, most of us can't. Why? Because most of us are not so faithful. We don't have so much trust. So instead of just taking it back to Krishna, we do it a little at a time. Okay, I'm going to turn a little bit to Krishna, see how that works out. A little bit to Krishna. Now, keep this attachment. A little bit to Krishna. Keep this attachment. A little bit to Krishna. I think I'm going to go back a little bit now. Okay. You know, so it generally takes us a long time. So what do we do with the material manifestations in the meantime? How do you deal with that? So there's two main ways of dealing with it. One is through grihastha life, and one is through one of the renounced ashrams. Those are the two main ways of dealing with it. And that's going to be different for different people, and it may be different for the same person at different parts of their life. In other words, one person may take to the renounced ashram for their whole life, but even differences in the renounced ashram. There's difference between the brahmacharya ashram and vanaprastha and sannyas. Or a person may be grihastha when they're young and then vanaprastha, and maybe even sannyas when they're older. So you have to see, how is it I want to deal with this energy? The main way I want to deal with this energy is give it to Krishna. That's where it belongs. But while I'm in the process of switching it from material to spiritual, what am I going to do with the material side of it? So you have two choices. You can take it up or down. Take it up is renunciation. Don't try to kill it. Please don't try to kill it. Doesn't work. Can't kill it. You can read the purport to Bhagavatam 5.25.5 or Majjalila 8.138. You can't kill it. Don't try to kill it, please. Or don't try to deny that it's there. Doesn't work. You will fail, and then you'll think there's something wrong with Krishna consciousness. So please don't waste your time doing that. If you take it up, then you're bringing the energy to study. What is this energy? What is this sexual energy? It's connection, which means yoga. Creativity. It's meant to create new life. Meant to have life. It's meant to expand love. Right? And happiness. So you do that through study and through preaching. Take that energy that you connect with all, like sannyasa is meant to make the whole world your family, right? Not that the sannyasi says, no, I don't know, I don't like anybody. So the grihastha likes their own family. The sannyasi sees the whole world as their family. They expand it. And in the yoga system, you literally take that bodily energy to the brain. Very literally, although not that many people can do that. But at least you take it to the activities of study and preaching. You pour yourself into creativity, into connecting with everyone through preaching. You don't repress it. And the grihastha uses it to have children. Or to have nice, on the emotional level, nice relationship between husband and wife. And then you decide, which is the way I want, well, how do I want to personally deal with this energy right now in my life? Do I want to deal with it by taking it to children and money and emotional relationship between husband and wife? Or do I want to put it into study? I want to put it into study and preaching and connecting with people through preaching. And then you honestly pick. And then you do the sacrifice. This is explained 3rd, 4th, 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Everything you do, there's a sacrifice. Then you do the sacrifice that goes with it. So if you want to use that energy for study, for preaching, for helping all living entities in Krishna's service, then what sacrifice do you do? You don't have emotional connections with the opposite sex. You don't have personal money. You have very few personal possessions. You may not even have a home. Right? Those are your sacrifices. And if you want to use it for children in relationship with the opposite sex, what's your sacrifices? You have to have a home and take care of the home, and you have to make the money, and you have to deal with the opposite sex. You know? And you have to take care of the children. You want the pleasure of dealing with the opposite sex? You have the austerity of dealing with the opposite sex. Do you want the pleasure of children? You have the austerity of children. You want the pleasure of your own home? You have the austerity of maintaining your own home. You want the pleasure of having money? You have the austerity of making money. You want the pleasure of freedom? Then you have the austerity of not knowing where your money's going to come from, or your room's going to come from, or your food's going to come from, or who's going to take care of you in your old age. And if you think about it, the pleasure and the austerity are two different ways of looking at the same thing. If I want the pleasure of not having a lot of possessions, that's a lot of pleasure. I don't have to worry about where they are and who's taking care of them and if they're going to rot, somebody's going to steal them. My mother used to sing a song like that from the opera Porgy and Bess. I got plenty of nothing and nothing's plenty for me. I got no home, not no car, got no family. Those with plenty of plenty, they keep a lock on their door. They're always worried somebody will take it while they're out getting more, right? So if you want the pleasure of having nothing, you have to have the austerity of having nothing. You want the pleasure of a house, you want the austerity of taking care of the house. They go together. And then you take that jagya and you offer it to Jagyapati. You say, my dear Lord, I am doing this tapasya for you. I am serving my husband for you, not to please my husband. I'll never perfectly please my husband 24 hours a day. Someday he'll come and say, oh, lasagna, wonderful. And other times he'll say, did you make lasagna again? You know, I'm doing the jagya for Krishna, to please Krishna. I'm keeping just one little box of possessions to please Krishna. I'm working really hard to make money to please Krishna. I'm not making any endeavor to get an income and just whatever he sends to please Krishna, to make him happy. And at the lower stage, I do that to please Krishna, and I'm still attached to the sense gratification. Whatever sense gratification he gives me, There's sense gratification in renunciation too, by the way. Whatever sense gratification he gives you, that's his prasadam. Isn't that our basic philosophy? We offer things in sacrifice, then we enjoy the prasadam, right? Is that right? Yes? Yes? Correct? Am I right? Okay. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati says this is the essence of how to advance if you're not already a pure devotee, if you're not already a bhava. It's in Brahma Samhita 561. It says if you're not already a bhava, you offer everything to Krishna as a sacrifice and then you enjoy the prasadam. And then, whether you're brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, as Prabhupada said, the devotee sees everything as happily situated. Your tapasya becomes pleasure. Everything becomes merged into Brahman. And at first you're actually enjoying the sense gratification, but you're saying, thank you, Krishna. Thank you for giving me this strawberry. You know, whatever. Thank you for the freedom. Thank you for the ability that I can just study. Or thank you that I can go out and use my psychophysical nature in earning a living, whatever it may be. And you thank Krishna. And gradually it becomes not about thanking Krishna for your sense gratification and doing some jagya to pay for it, but gradually it just becomes about how nice Krishna is. Instead of the thing that you're getting, wow, thank you, Krishna, for this thing. It becomes, thank you, Krishna, 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 wow, Krishna. And pretty soon it's just about a relationship with Krishna. Krishna, I'm doing this jagya for you, and you're taking care of me. Krishna, Krishna, wow, Krishna is so nice. And pretty soon it becomes about the relationship with Krishna. And pretty soon what you're relishing is not the things that Krishna gives you, whether they're study and freedom and preaching, or whether it's a house and a blender and cute little kids. But what you're relishing is the relationship. And after a while, then you're not even so much relishing the relationship of service, just relishing pleasing Krishna. And then everything's happily situated. So the materialists don't understand this. They think, oh, the sacrifice, it's something. I want to do some sacrifice. Why should I do some sacrifice? Yeah, I'll just take the pleasure. Forget the sacrifice. If you try to take the pleasure without the sacrifice, what are you doing? What's that called? Stealing! And you always got to worry. Right? And if you try to steal pleasure, your pleasure becomes sacrifice. The very pleasure becomes miserable. And if you do sacrifice happily, willingly, not grudgingly, grudging sacrifices in the mode of passion and you don't get the results. Not, oh, I want to enjoy sex life, so I got to take care of this wife. What a pain. Oh. I want freedom, so I can't keep any money. Darn it. Not like that. But happily, Krishna, I happily offer you this jagya. I want to offer you this jagya. Then, even your jagya becomes happiness. It's the difference between the mode of goodness and the mode of passion. Mode of goodness, at first it seems, oh, I got to do all this jagya. And everything becomes nectar. So that's what you do with the material side of your desires in the meantime. And then everything merges into transcendence, and it becomes part of bhakti. You're taking care of your children, you're taking care of your home, or you're taking care of your one suitcase. It all becomes bhakti. It all becomes transcendent. If you want to try to become detached the other way just through being miserable, you know, good luck. But I don't think that will. I don't think that will work. I don't think that will work. All right, so we've gone way over time. Thank you very much. So today we can try to have everything remind us of Krishna and to give all of our desires and emotions to Krishna, and in that way become perfectly happy, and then automatically all knowledge and detachment will develop. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.